Weirdly and Tori here. Just wanted to pop in and tell you guys a little bit about the BarkBox Super Chewer Box. With two Super Chewers in my house, I've spent hundreds of dollars trying out all kinds of, quote, indestructible toys, all of which were destructed in mere minutes of meeting my dogs. Emily had suggested BarkBox to me, but I thought there was no way that these toys were going to hold up to my dogs. But then she told me about the Super Chewer Box, so we decided to try it. Even with the Super Chewer Box, though, my dog Hodor had destroyed one of the toys, though it did take him longer than normal. Emily suggested I reach out to BarkBox, and I'm so glad that I did. Their amazing customer service listened to my concerns and helped me customize the type of toys and treats that I receive, and it's been smooth sailing ever since. But Super Chewer isn't just toys. You get treats and chews in every box, and you can buy extra toys and treats from their website. My dogs are like my kids, and it's Christmas every month when that BarkBox arrives. If you follow the link in our show notes, you'll get double your first box. If you have a Super Chewer, this is the box for you, and your pup will thank you.
Hello and welcome. Thank you. What the fuck? We'll just restart that. Bloop, 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 bloop. Here we go. Hello and welcome to Three's a Crime, a true crime podcast. I'm Tori.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Lindsay.
And that's our intro.
Here we are. We are professional podcasters.
We're podcasters, bitches.
What we're actually reading from is
the Big Book of Serial Killers, 150 serial killer files from the world's worst murderers. It's a very cool book. We will put a link in our show notes because Tori bought it for herself and also the Three's a Crime Library, which we have just started thanks to Tori.
No, it started with Lindsay because she bought the...
the Conjure one. Yeah, but that's right. But also bought the last podcast. That has a ton of serial killer information.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and just order, I think I'm going to go ahead and order the second one. The second one's only $14.15.
Get it.
It's on sale.
Oh my God, Lindsay, I'm just going to show you the other gift that I got you.
Yeah.
I got you a personalized pillow of Goobert.
That's so awesome.
I only didn't for you because you have 100 dogs.
I know.
And they might
they would just eat it.
I hope it turns, it still hasn't shown up because I got two for my parents also, and I really hope they turn out.
She got me a rose quartz penis.
I mean, tell me that's not like thoughtful as hell.
It was very, very thoughtful. It's just very, very tiny.
I know.
I wonder if they make like...
I told Oma, I said, I got Tori a rose quartz penis, and she goes, why the fuck didn't you get me one? And I said, well, it's only like this big. And she's like, oh, I don't want that. That's not useful.
I'll also take a picture of it so that we can post it on, I don't know, would Instagram take it down?
Oh, maybe.
It is anatomically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that I have just fondled a rose quartz penis... We're going to talk about dildos today in my story. Are you guys ready to hear? All right. So, today.
Hello. Today, welcome.
Hello. How are you? Welcome.
How was your new year?
So, it's our Pacific.
I never remember which way it goes, but it's...
Specific Pacific.
Anyway. This is like our throwback to episode one.
This is a throwback to episode one because it's another Spokane story.
And Yates was also on the South Hill, right?
So yeah. I mean, so we're like
geographically the same areas. We're looping.
We're looping because February is our 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
First up. Hey.
All right. So in 1978, a series of rapes begin happening in Spokane.
Spokane, Washington.
Washington.
Guys, just, I'm just Spokane. Being a shit.
Okay. Not Spokane.
Oh, I was listening to Morbid, and they said that in, when they were growing up, it was called the Oregon Trail.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And I've always heard people say Oregon, you know, but I've never heard someone say that's how they were introduced to the game, is it being called
the Oregon
Trail. Oregon Trail. And I said, what the fuck are your teachers doing where they don't even know how to pronounce a state correctly? So where, I want to know.
Are they located on the east side?
They're in Massachusetts. That's, they're in Boston.
East side is you always Oregon. I've heard.
But shouldn't, like, if you learn it in school, shouldn't the teacher, like, know the name of the state?
Schools don't really teach you much in real life.
Well, I want to know, when you were growing up, what was it called, Oregon Trail or Oregon Trail?
Oregon.
Because it's called the Oregon Trail, in case anyone's wondering.
Sounds like you're saying Oregon. The Oregon Trail.
Oregon's like my
Oregon Trail.
Oregon.
Oregon.
You guys, okay, so you guys remember me telling you about watching that Joan Didion documentary, right? So one thing I did not know about her is that her ancestors had been with the Donner Party. Like her, like great, like they had all, they were all traveling together. And, you know, the Donner Party obviously wanted to go this shortcut. And her family was like, no, we're going to stay with this, you know,
with the normal, I think the guide and the long way, safer way.
Yeah, we're going to go the safer way. We have maps and whatnot. And so they survived. And obviously.
Wow. But I want to know, when you were growing up, if you played it, what your teacher called it.
All right. So it was 1978 when a bunch of rapes start happening in Spokane.
Okay.
Rapist.
Okay. Now for the rapist.
Well, it's fun. I stopped because I personally thought you said preface. Okay. Our majority of the rapes were happening on the south side of town in the area that we call the South Hill. And to all of those people who are outside of Spokane, we do call it the South Hill. Not
South Hill.
South Hill. So I watched a really terrible made for TV movie about this story called Sins of the Mother. It's on Amazon.
Oh yeah, you did send it to us.
So yeah, where she was like,
Every woman in South Hill knows it. No, that's not anything any Spokaneite has ever said.
No.
Oh, no. We're called Spokaneites? Spokaneites?
People are, yeah.
Spokaneites, yeah.
Spokaneite.
So, but the one thing about the South Hill is during that time, and really to this day, it is kind of the area where most of the middle class to upper middle class live. And so, like, Emily lives on the South Hill. I mean, you live in essentially a normal neighborhood, but when you start getting
up streets down from where it gets real ritzy.
Exactly. Yeah, like High Drive, you know, we were talking about.
When you pass 29th, you're heading into Richland.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. And right but underneath me is real, like, janky land. So
it's in chunks. There's, like, sections. Right. It's really,
and,
like,
But in the 80s, that was definitely the
ritzy.
The ritzy part of town. Yeah, now, in 1977, noted author and runner Dan Cardong created Bloomsday, which is a timed race that's here in Spokane. It's an annual event that still occurs every year.
Yep.
The reason that I bring this up is that with the creation of Bloomsday, Spokane had become like a jogging city. So everybody,
I don't know why I live here.
Because, I think it's I think we've kind of gotten over it, but when it was first new and super...
We're not a Christian running city anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely not a Christian running city.
I know, I love that, because, you know, we always tell stories about, they were an upstanding family, yes. They went to church. Well, all of Spokane is an upstanding city, though.
Yeah, upstanding citizen.
Also, a piece of trivia, we also invented Father's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Spokane started Father's Day.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Hear about this every Father's Day on the local news.
True.
Oh, gosh. All right.
There's your piece of trivia.
So, the other reason that I mention it is because many of the women who were attacked were women who were out jogging.
Oh, see, we're safe then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you shouldn't jog. Reason number one.
Right. Wow. Oh my God, I'm going to talk about, there's one lady that we get to in here where she was like out for her daily 10 mile run. And I'm like,
oh my God, like Tara Calico with her 35 mile bike ride.
Go hang out with Tara.
My God.
Run and ride.
And I'm
together.
Just like, I am missing the part of my brain that says, wake up, go run.
If I'm running, there's something changing. Yeah, exactly. So you should be running too.
Exactly. The other women who were getting attacked were women who had just gotten off of one of like Spokane's public transport buses.
Mm.
So at this time, in the late 70s and early 80s, Spokane had two major newspapers. The Spokesman Review.
Still major.
It's our only paper.
Owns
I think.
The city.
Other than like the Inlander, which is
Dryfly bought out half of their Spokesman. They make vodka there now. It's a distillery in the building. It's like they turned half of it into a distillery.
I do That's have to say, cool. though, the Spokesman Review building downtown is beautiful. And it always makes me think of, like, back to Superman, like, Metropolis. Like, it's very...
It does
very,
have a very old newspaper-y
vibe. Our entire downtown has really beautiful, cool, old school buildings. Yeah. The Spokesman Review is, like...
Yeah.
In high school, we got extra credit for touring the downtown buildings because they were so historical. Like, if you went to the Davenport, you got extra credit.
Well, and one other thing that I'll mention right now is, so I did watch an episode of Shattered, which I found on Discovery Plus.
Yes.
And that one is, it's great because they actually did come here to, like, film and interview people. So if you have any, you're curious about what Spokane looks like, there are some very beautiful, like, aerial shots of town. We'll link whatever episode that was. Okay, so the other major newspaper was the Spokane Daily Chronicle, which is not in existence anymore.
It sounds like a fake newspaper. like a Spider-Man newspaper.
Spokane Daily Chronicle.
Yep.
So in the spring of 1980, Chris Pack was a Metro columnist for the Spokesman Review, and he wrote a column about one of the traumatized victims. This is what he said. A horrible specter is back on the South Hill. In jogging clothes, threatening with a knife, it has begun to strike at women in one of Spokane's classiest neighborhoods. Women on the South Hill, be furious together. Look for clues, find the courage to open your eyes, press charges if you can. Otherwise, creeps will prevail. Conversely, the managing editor of the Spokane Daily Chronicle, Gordon Coe, wrote an editorial which said in part, it is hoped that every man out jogging is not hounded off the streets because some rape reports have said the attacker wore jogging clothes.
I want to go back to that first quote where it's shaming women to say something, and if you don't...
I read that differently. I read it more, and maybe just because I read a little bit more of the stuff surrounding it, but it was meant more to be like the police...
Be aware.
Like, the police aren't doing this. So, like, women, look for clues. Because
this was just like, quit being a fucking puss.
No. Okay, no, that makes not more, at all.
I was like...
Dude. Yeah, it was more like, look for clues. Like, protect yourselves. Mm-hmm. Because... It's not happening. You know, it's not happening.
I just assumed the men were being assholes.
There's going to be some things that I'm going to say to you, especially one of the police captains makes a comment that is going to make you scream. Comment. So we're going to... This is a long story, guys, so just settle in. It's going to be a bumpy road. And this story I did a little bit differently because a lot of... I just have to do it like a timeline because so many things happened and it was just a lot of information to keep track of. So, and I'm going to talk about some of the rapes that happened. It's estimated, or
they think that the person that we're going to talk about committed like 40 rapes. I don't have all, I don't have information on all 40. I will read all of the ones that I have information for, and we'll get there, but it's not all of them. And as we'll see later, he wasn't convicted on all of them. So on April 26, 1978, a 19-year-old woman was walking home from a restaurant after getting in a fight with her husband. It was just after midnight when she was walking that a man in jogging clothes popped out from behind a car.
Oh, no. Nope.
Grabbed her, dragged her into the bushes.
No, oh my God. There's so much I already hate about this.
And brutally raped her. He shoved his fist in her mouth to keep her from screaming.
No.
For locals, this happened on the West 1200 block of Indiana.
I was just trying to imagine.
Like where?
Shoving the fist in the mouth.
Then on September 9th, 1979, local disc jockey known as Sunshine Shelley was raped outside the radio station at KJRB. So I do have names for quite a few of the people involved, for all of the women, and I will state this later, of all of the women, so she was one, and some others, gave their permission back in 2008 to have, like, their names released and whatnot to the Spokesman Review and to, like, to the news shows. I felt like I don't personally have their approval to use their names, so I did not. But yes, Sunshine Shelley. So in her words, from an NBC News article in 2008, she said, "I had my regular show and got off the air, walked out of the building to get into my car. From out of nowhere, someone grabbed me and then just took his fist and proceeded to immediately just start beating the daylights out of my face. At one point, he stuck his hand down my throat, and I bit his hand hard enough to draw blood."
Hell yeah, bitch.
In addition to beating her senseless, he told her he was going to kill her, and then he raped her. When he finished, he said to her,
"Oh God.
Now, before I go, I have a couple of questions I want to ask you.
Oh no.
How do you plan to further your radio career?"
What the fuck?
What?
Sir?
Right?
Pardon.
Now, Sunshine Shelley was attacked from behind, and like those who had gone before her. Like, this guy was always attacking from behind, so she never saw.
You don't see anything.
Yeah, who it was. Shortly after her return to the air, she received a call from her fucking rapist.
No!
Telling her that he knew where she lived, and if she told anyone, he was going to come and kill her.
My God, no!
So she started sleeping in her closet, curled up with a butcher knife. Because she was so scared.
I'm assuming she was like a single woman at the time.
Mm-hmm. December 11th, 1979, Deaconess is a local hospital here. So a Deaconess nurse was heading to work, and she was grabbed at 6:45 a.m. The man shoved his gloved hand down her throat.
My God. I literally can't even.
Like, that's what I keep trying to imagine.
Right.
In a man's hand.
Exactly.
Where it's like, I can't even fit my own hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that's like a sex thing. You'll be like, I can fit my whole fist in my mouth. I cannot, so. I wonder if the sides of their mouths tore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like,
the amount of trauma that literally would happen to your mouth.
So as you can see, as we're talking about this now, and we're going to get to that, get into it more, but, like, this shoved fist in the mouth becomes, like,
his MO.
Part of his MO, yeah. Same thing with saying that he has a knife, and, and the other thing, too, is that he was, like, literally, like, beating these women's faces as well. Like,
what a little bitch boy.
Yeah. I think one of them, he broke her nose, like, and we'll talk about this later, but there's another part where, like, the doctor that looked at her after just said, like, her entire throat, like, everything was just, like, all, like cut, like, shredded. So that nurse, he, again, told her that he had a knife and that he would cut her if she moved. Then on March 11th of 1980, a full-time law student was raped. She was 95% sure that she knew who had attacked her upon seeing him in, like, a photo lineup, but she was working for the public defender's office at the time, and she thought she had to be 100% sure, so she never formally identified him. So let me hearken back to, and this is why previously we were saying, like, there should be no statute of limitations on sexual assault.
Yeah, that's fucking bullshit.
But I want to clarify, because we had a listener comment or question and say, hey, did I hear this right? Are you saying that there's no statute of limitation on sex crimes based on the Adam Walsh Act of 2006? And no, unfortunately, that is not the case. If I said that and misspoke, I apologize. Many sex crimes no longer have a statute of limitations, but I think it is, again, related to sexual assaults against children. I don't know that that happened. Like, I don't know that that did anything for it adult was, sexual assault cases.
Carrie Reynolds.
So then on April 4th, 1980, a 19-year-old woman was jogging in her South Hill neighborhood. She said her attacker had put her in a chokehold and that she couldn't breathe. On August 30th, 1980, a 15-year-old girl took a bus home from a concert. She was raped around 12:30 a.m. at 16th and Cedar.
Is he raping them outside?
Yes.
So he's just, like, grabbing from the bus. This is I've been listening to is the Barbie Ken murders. And he does the same thing. Yeah. He waits for a young That's girl terrifying. From a bus and then does it.
And jogging and buses were his main... But he also, and we'll get to it, but he also was, like, stalking bus routes, like, following the buses.
Yeah, that's
and,
I'm yeah. sure all these questions you'll tell us, but I'm like, wait, where
I
is
know.
It?
I'm well, like, I'm yeah. like, and normally I'm just like, just wait. But, like, this story I've spent so much time, and it's so in-depth, and I'm...
Yes. Like, let me tell you.
Yeah, let me tell you way ahead of time what happened. Okay, so this is a big one. On October 23rd, 1980, a 27-year-old woman was returning from work by bus on her first day in a new job and a new neighborhood. And she was raped about 6:30. And 6:30 in October, I mean, it's dark. Like,
yeah, it's dark.
I don't know if people know, but, like, in the Pacific Northwest,
it's dark early.
Fall, winter, like, we're dark at, like, 4 p.m. looks like midnight outside. Yeah, it's insane. It's
not a good time.
So I'm going to call this victim Jane. And this is what I said earlier. The press doesn't normally identify rape victims, but this victim had given her permission, and she does appear in that episode of Shattered with her real name, and she discusses the case. And, like, it was, I really struggled because I'm like, on one hand, I really want to use her name because she's a badass bitch. Like, this woman is amazing, but I don't personally have her approval, so I'm not going to.
You're way
name.
Too good. I would.
Yeah, I would think you're still okay if she gave it to a.
But
to
you're a, way because you're working legal land.
I know so she's well, so much even, nicer.
Well, it's not even that I'm worried. I don't know if she still lives in town, and you know, again, this news is out there. A lot of people already know who she is, and if I had had more time, I probably would have reached out to her. But I didn't. So I just want to be respectful and be like, I don't know. I don't know if she wants her name out there. I mean,
whatever you want to do.
So Jane and her husband had just moved to Spokane and bought their first house. Aww. Like, when I say they were new to Spokane, they got the keys to their house on Friday. Movers came Saturday. They unpacked Sunday, and she started that new job Monday.
Wow, Jesus that's Christ. A bad bitch.
So, like, she didn't even really, I mean... Like, she knew that, like, I guess, like, the people in town were definitely, like, wigged out about something and, like, you couldn't buy mace anywhere, but she didn't really know, like, I mean, she was so new, she didn't really know what was going on. Anyway, so she started her new job. She was an assistant manager of a jewelry store. Let me try that again. Julie had just started her new job as the Julie... Oh,
wait.
Shit.
Jane
at the jewelry store.
Jane started her new job as the assistant manager of a jewelry store in downtown Spokane. She'd had a really good day. Aww. It was her first time riding the bus home, and she realized that she'd actually missed her stop. So she pulled the cord, and then she'd get off at the next stop and began walking back towards. Yeah. She noticed a man jog past her and then stop and stoop behind an RV.
Nope.
Oh.
And she said, you know, she just assumed that he was getting ready to play a prank on someone, like running ahead of somebody and then hiding behind a car to like jump out and scare
Adult
him.
Man is doing that. You get away from him.
Yeah.
Yes. Red flag. Red flag.
Yeah. Even huge red flag because fucking run. This yeah. jogger wasn't getting ready to no. play no. a prank. He was getting ready to attack. And that is exactly what he did. Jane was grabbed from behind and picked up in the air.
Jesus.
This is where she said it was, she said, took several seconds to realize what was happening. And by then it was too late to really do anything. Mm-hmm. The man threw her down, and kept trying to get his hand in her mouth. She was pinned to the ground and could barely breathe. She said she thought, please make it fast if this is how I go. The man had drug her into a vacant lot and raped her while he asked her vulgar questions about her sex life. He brushed her hair over her eyes and told her not to look at him. That moment, something clicked for her, and she just thought, study his face, study his face. Mm-hmm. So she began trying to memorize his features, and when a passing car, like the headlights went by, she got a real good look at his face. But he caught her looking and immediately slugged her hard and was just like, don't look at me, don't look at me. Before he left and ran off into the night, he told her, the police can't protect you 24 hours a day. And he had also told her that he, like, knew where she lived and he, yeah. So after he ran off into the night, she ran to a neighboring house for help and she was taken to the hospital. She was, her face was fucked up. Like, two black eyes, things were shattered. She was completely traumatized. She tells this story on Shattered about how they called her husband and he came to the hospital and that, like, he was that old school. And this is the 80s. So most of the men in the story were this old school, like, I'm supposed to protect my woman.
Yeah.
And just said that he broke down and cried that he wasn't able to protect her, which on one hand I think is sweet. And on the other hand, I'm like, this isn't about you, husband.
100%.
I think my husband would react the same way, though.
Right.
I think he would definitely, like, feel... There's definitely a sense of, like...
I failed
yeah, as a husband or yeah. a spouse or whatever.
But later on that evening, there was an officer outside of, you know, the curtain. And she's, you know, Jane is just laying in bed there. And an ambulance attendant walked by and said, oh, is that another one? And the cop was like, yeah, doesn't that make about 30? And that's when Jane realized, like, how big... this was. Yeah, so at this point, there had been about 30 rapes. And like I said, I only wrote about the ones I could find information on. But this is by no means a comprehensive list. So the rapist, again, had attacked everyone from behind. So until this point, nobody had seen his face. And Jane said that, like, a little bead of pride began to well up inside her as she thought, I know what he looks like.
Fuck a bitch.
What a satisfying thing mm-hmm. to know something horrible happened, but, like, you did what you need to do.
And this was 2.5 years after the first rape. The police finally would have something to go on. They now know that the suspect was a white male. He was about 5'11", 170 pounds, with brown wavy hair. She also remembered his voice and said it sounded well-bred and educated. Shockingly, the sketch, though, didn't initially yield many results. On December 17th, a 14-year-old girl was walking to meet a friend when she was attacked at 6:30 p.m. at Ralph and 18th. So then in 1981, February 5th of 1981, a 51-year-old woman was jogging at Hartfield. She was raped at 7 a.m. Her attacker wore rough gloves, I don't know what that means, but rough gloves, and pinned her to the ground with his knees on her shoulders.
Ugh.
He told her he needed this very badly.
Ew.
He told her that he had a knife. He inserted his fingers inside her, but there was no penile penetration, so no semen sample could be collected. She was able to give a detailed description of her attacker to the police, but a few days later, she would also be hypnotized to see if they could garner any additional information, but this didn't. She didn't.
They hypnotized everybody in the 80s.
Do you eat your cheese sticks like a fucking psychopath?
Yes, because I'm hungry.
I sometimes do that as well.
No, there is like, something so wrong with I'm both
not,
of you.
I'm not okay, taking so it off individually.
For those of us, for those of you out in
she's just taking hunks land, of bites of her cheese. She's like a monster.
It's, but it's string cheese. Like, so that's why Emily is having, yes. Yeah, like
bitch fit.
Yeah, she really is. Like, you should see the look of disgust on Emily's face. Because
I hate it. So
Lindsay
much.
Is not pulling.
Even if I'm starving,
strings.
I will like pull it and like eat. I will like inhale it.
So anyway,
oh my god,
the day. So the day after the woman was raped at Hartfield, a janitor at Sacagawea Junior High School, which is near Hartfield, called police to tell them he had seen a silver Chevy Citation in the area the previous morning. The car had yellow plates, which is what the state's... The car had yellow plates, which looked like vanity plates, but... So that's what vanity plates were at the time. Yeah. They were yellow.
Yeah.
And I think that they had, like, a different letter numbering system, which is why the guy was like... They looked like vanity plates, but then they didn't look like vanity plates. Like, something was weird. Police later hypnotized him to see if they could get the license plate number, but it didn't work. On February 9th, a 20-year-old woman dropped her son off at her mother's house.
2 days after my birthday.
Yes. And she was raped 3 houses away at 6:30 in the morning. So 21-year-old, and this was the West 400 block of 24th. So she had dropped off her son and got raped 3 houses down. Like, that's insane.
He was watching.
Now, at some point between February 6th and February 25th, the car is linked to Gordon Coe, the managing editor of the Spokane
the last name,
Daily Chronicle.
The last name being that's Coe. And I was going to ask, but you went all over it so quickly. I just
well, I
it
did.
Wasn't relevant.
I did.
You sneaky bitch.
Intentionally.
Fucking you sneaky bitch. Little bitch.
That's me. Yes, the car is linked to Gordon Coe, the managing editor of the Spokane Daily Chronicle.
Knew it.
But he doesn't fit Jane's description.
Mm.
So then they are like, okay, well, let's just look at the entire family. So now I'm going to tell you about the Coe family. So Gordon, the father, was born in Spokane in 1916. He became a reporter for the Spokane Chronicle in 1938.
Fuck, dude.
He served as the city editor for 25 years and then became the managing editor in 1975.
Wow.
He was very well respected in town. He was described as being like an even, steady man. He was mild-mannered, you know. So he obviously owned the car that had been reported. But didn't fit the description of the attacker. I mean, for one thing, he was clearly decades older than what Jane had reported. But he was also the one in charge of the paper for receiving tips regarding the South Hill rapist.
Oh.
Now, Ruth.
Oh, Ruth. I'm
Ruthie.
Scared.
Ruthie Coe. She was a unique character. She was a Spokane native and socialite. She was also a former charm school teacher.
Oh. Do you remember charm school on VH1 or MTV or whatever?
I do.
Oh, so I'm too old for that, too.
It was all the people on the fucking Flavor of Love. They had to go to charm school because they were so gross.
I only ever think about A League of Their Own when I think of the
Yes.
Gracefully and grandfully or whatever.
Crossing the legs. So in 1973, Ruth was diagnosed as manic depressive, which we now call bipolar, and took lithium as well as an array of other drugs to manage that. Now, then we get to Frederick Harlan Coe.
Frederick Harlan Coe!
Fred is the son of Gordon and Ruth, and he was born February 2nd, 1947. Fred claimed that he was a radio DJ, a news editor, a championship boxer, and an author. Now, the author title comes from a self-published book titled Sex in the White House, and then subtitled Cuz, C-U-Z, After All,
Politics is dirty business. B-I-Z-N-E-S-S.
When did this come out?
I added it to the fucking library.
We need that book right now.
He wrote his own tagline calling himself one of the country's great new satirists. He also called himself Kevin for reasons only he knows.
He really sounds like...
Go ahead. I was gonna say he's like a douchebag that gives himself a nickname, and that's literally what he did.
Yeah,
it's like Paolo from the House of Gucci.
Gucci.
That's exactly.
Yeah, he was just like, I shall now be known by Kevin. Anyway, so yeah, so he calls and introduces himself to everybody as Kevin, even though his name is Frederick. And in all reality, he was, like, lazy. He was a real estate agent, and I say that in quotes because he...
Was he a fake estate agent?
I mean, no, he really... No, he really was a real estate agent. He was just really bad at it. Okay, so one other thing I want to note here is that Ruth and Fred Kevin had... an unusual relationship.
Oh. God damn it.
In 1983, author Jack Olson wrote a book called Son, A Psychopath and His Victims. In it, he writes, "Mother and son had always been close. He lovingly called her Bearfax or Mother Bear, and she called him Freddico, Coco, Ricky, and Son. She had some kind of whammy on him. There was no doubt about that. They were 26 years apart. Ruth was 58 now, although she still dressed like a young woman. But the two of them acted more like boyfriend and girlfriend.
Nope.
Even to the point of spats and reconciliations." I don't know. And it's hard because I watched that horrible TV movie, which definitely makes her out to seem like super crazy. Mm. Like at one point in that, his girlfriend comes over for dinner. And she spends the whole dinner with, like, this fake Southern accent and pretending like she's, like, in Gone with the Wind. And then later the girlfriend's like, "I didn't realize that your mom was Southern." And he's like, "Oh, she's not." So it's like, I don't know.
It's just Ma being Ma.
Right? So, like,
it's just sassy.
But it was, like, in the thing, she wanted, she was constantly threatening to, like, cut him off. And he had been married. He had been married before in 1972, and I didn't include that in this either, but which I read this whole weird, rabbit holes, man. I don't know how I find them, but there was this whole rabbit hole. I didn't, because I couldn't find a lot of information about her relationship with him, but I did read a story about how, like, after she had left him, that she got involved with, like, some guy, and then they got involved with a cult, and the cult, like, it was like a satanic cult, and how they, like, held her hand over an open something until, like,
Oh my God, I wish that had more information for me. I want to know.
When we break, I'll look it up and yeah,
this really gives me flashbacks of Succession.
Yeah,
Logan and Kendall.
Kind of, yeah.
When Kendall's down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So Gordon and Ruth also had a daughter who I did not name here. I'm like, the I'm poor sure woman she wants nothing wants to do with any of this story. So they did have a daughter. I'm not going to go into her. The last member of the family that I'm going to talk about wasn't actually a member of the family, but his name is Jay Williams. And he had been Fred Kevin's best friend since fourth grade. They were
Fred Kevin.
Well, because, like, I don't know. Like,
Fred Kevin's perfect.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't
know. That's my favorite. Yeah. The name of Kevin is just funny. Like, I don't know.
Like, all the names you're choosing.
Kevin.
So they were such good friends for the next 25 years that Jay said that his friendship with, like, that friendship was part of his identity. Like, they were, I mean... They had met in fourth grade on the playground. They almost came to blows. And then, like, 2 days later, they were best friends and they had remained best friends.
God, guys are so...
Yeah.
Boys. It's a boy thing.
Jay said that when they were in fourth grade, Fred had come up with a goal for the two of them. Jay said, quote, "We were to become as rich, handsome, and healthy as we could. Everything else was subjugated to those goals." And, like, weirdly, like, Jay was also a real estate agent. Anna's best friend. Like, they worked together. Like, it was really...
Well, if he's a part of his personality, then he's probably going to just mime what...
Yeah, Yeah. And he talks about, you know, he talked about the Coes, the parents. He really liked them, respected them. So police, knowing that Gordon doesn't fit the description, they go and look at some juvenile records. And they're able to confirm that Frederick Coe was the son of Gordon Coe. They're also able to confirm that Fred Kevin drives Gordon car. They're also able to confirm that Fred Kevin drives Gordon's car and that the license plate is covered in yellow cellophane.
Why
could I get all of that out in a fake Southern accent, but not in my own?
Because it's yellow cellophane. And where does yellow cellophane even exist?
Yellow cellophane.
So remember the vanity plates in Spokane were yellow. Right. So basically, he had covered, Fred Kevin had covered, wrapped the license plate in yellow cellophane to make it appear like a vanity plate, but it wasn't actually a vanity plate. In the juvenile records, they discover that Fred Kevin had been arrested for entering an apartment complex and had attempted an attack on a babysitter in one of those apartments. This is as a juvenile. She screamed and he was arrested. Her parents wouldn't let her testify, so no charges were filed. Jay, however, recalled that Fred Kevin used to roam the halls of Brown's Addition apartment buildings, turning the doorknobs to see if they would open.
Lock your doors.
And he recalled Fred Kevin telling him that in 1971, he entered an apartment this way, supposedly tripped over the sleeping woman, a.k.a. the babysitter, who upon discovering his presence, screamed. Now, Coe's explanation was that he had an allergic reaction to medication and thought he was at his friend's house in L.A.
That's what he said when he was deposed about it.
Sir, you need better
Need better lies.
Okay, better. Fucking Henry Lee Lucas over here. My God.
Just pull it from your asshole.
And but Jay doesn't recall him ever saying any such thing to him when Kevin told him the story. In that case, like, other residents, like, when this had happened with the babysitter, other residents heard her scream and chased him down and caught him, and he was arrested on suspicion of indecent liberties for fondling the woman.
Ew.
Jay had also started to notice that Kevin's personality was changing, and he wasn't the only one noticing. His work attendance had started to become unreliable. And people in their life were asking, like, what is wrong with him? He'd gone from dressing in, like, designer clothing to showing up at the office in sweats. And he'd come in with scratches or other injuries that he claimed to have gotten from dogs on his jogs. Like, oh, he's attacked by a dog every day?
And then just gave you a little scratchy scratch?
Yeah, like, what?
It only works if you have a kitten at home.
Yes.
A kitten.
He was more distant with everyone, and even Jay felt that, like, jokes from their 25-year friendship were no longer amusing.
That's sad. Yeah. That's the end.
That's the end.
Death of a friendship.
So, Jay was horrified by what was happening in Spokane, and he felt his own pangs of possibly not being able to protect his family and the ones that he loved. And so one day, like, they're just in a grocery store or something, and Jay sees something about the South Hill rapist, and he mentions, like, you know, he says to Fred Kevin, like, man, if I could just find that guy, like, I would take him out, and just talking about how disgusting this guy is and how he needs to be taken care of.
Needs to be taken out.
Fred Kevin got kind of upset and said that that was a terrible thing to say and not very religious-like. And Jay had just sort of, like, found God and was, like, early on in his, like, relationship with the Lord and going to church. And so, like, that was kind of, like, a little bit of a
was
dig
his
there.
Mother the one in that show that we just played? Ruining the Christian image of Spokane.
Yes. So that clip that we heard is supposed to be Ruth talking to Gordon, like, you would never print anything that would sully the Christian image of it's supposed to be Ruth and Gordon
that
and
makes sense.
Fred Kevin all talking.
Is the movie terrible?
Um,
like, as a movie?
I mean, it's 90s Hallmark made for TV.
Is it like
overdramatic?
Afternoon special or whatever the fuck they used to call them. You know what I mean?
Like an after school special?
After school special, yeah. No.
Afternoon special is a sex thing, I'm pretty sure. Afternoon delight.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Okay, sorry, go on.
So on February 25th, police began steady surveillance of Fred Kevin's movements. And I think from now on, now that we've talked about all of the Coes, I'm just going to call him Co. And then if I'm talking about one of the parents, I'll say Ruth or Gordon.
It's so boring. I prefer Fred Kevin.
You prefer Fred Kevin? So they're steadily surveilling Co's movements. They put like a tracker on his car and they followed him for about 3 to 4 weeks. Police showed the 51-year-old victim a photo of Fred Kevin, and she exclaims, "That's him." Even still, the prosecutor doesn't think that they have enough evidence, so he wouldn't move forward. The best thing that the police can do now is follow him and just hope he makes a move while they're watching.
Did they show his picture to Janie's Got the Gun?
Janie's Got a Gun.
So we're going to get to...
Okay, sorry. Oh, I pulled a Tory, didn't I?
Yeah, pulled a Tory. So the best thing that they can do is follow him and hope that he makes a move. They followed him around the areas that, like, the rapist had hit. And it was clear that he was on the hunt. Like, they're watching him follow buses. They're watching him in the areas where previous, like, driving around, previous rapes have occurred. And, I mean, on one hand, I'm like, well, you know, you're saying he's driving around the areas where previous rapes occurred, but, like, Spokane's not that big. I mean,
yeah.
And if you live on the South Hill, you're probably driving around those areas. But I think it was more, like,
Following these buses.
Yeah, that's weird.
At one point, they watched him follow a woman in the same area of Hartfield that the 51-year-old survivor had been raped. But at the last moment, he turned off and he didn't attack her. And then they lost him. And so they were never able to catch him doing anything.
His ages are just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
February 28th, a local dentist is out for a jog. And then he gets to about 33rd and High Drive, and he's like, hey, there's a guy running, like, 300 feet in front of me. Hey, that man is naked from the waist down. So he's like, fuck this. And he starts chasing the man, and the man takes off, and he jumped over a bluff a few blocks from 29th and High Drive and emerged with red shorts on. I don't know what happened after that.
What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
High Drive is so beautiful.
It really is.
We looked at a house there, surprisingly. It was the weirdest house I have ever seen. That's why it was in our price range.
Right. Well, and I wanted to tell our listeners, too, because if you're not local to Spokane, so High Drive is kind of this long, windy road that goes from, like, downtown up through the South Hill. But you've got, like, kind of mountain sort the of view. On one side, and then the other yeah. side is all open, and you when you're driving that up and down, you basically have a view of all of Spokane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's absolutely beautiful.
And we have Centennial Trail, which goes through, there's a bunch of hiking trails and
there's,
stuff.
Yeah,
we run that
and
constantly.
Centennial's goes around like Kendall Yards as well.
Yeah, we have a massive trail that's like one of the longest in the fucking.
And we're going to talk about that, too.
Okay,
in
sorry.
Just a few minutes.
Jesus.
So, a lot of people jog here, so it yeah. makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Especially in that area, now that I'm thinking about it, everyone jogs around High Drive and takes dogs on walks mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yeah. Hmm.
So on March 4th, under mounting police pressure, Spokane Police Chief Robert Panther calls a press conference cool to announce name. That the police have spent like 8,600 man hours at that point trying to catch the South Hill rapist. And, like, Spokane didn't have, like a rape squad. Mm-hmm. So, but they had quietly, what is his name? Gene McGugan, I believe. They had started, like, a task force for this. So, on March 8th, an 18-year-old college freshman and track athlete, this is the one that was on her daily 10-mile run.
Man.
Right? Like, I want that part of my brain.
I want... To
yeah.
want that.
Me too.
Yeah. Yes.
She was confronted by a man in jeans running towards her as she was jogging on the Centennial Trail. Centennial Trail near Upriver Drive. he had something down by his crotch that was moving. And
was it his dick? That's like all. I'm picturing it just. You know, it's not funny, but what I pictured is way funny.
I imagine like a snake dick. She
was confronted by a man in jeans running towards her. She was jogging on the Centennial Trail. He had something down at his crotch that was moving, and as he approached her, he was yelling vulgar things, and then she realizes what he has in his hand is a giant dildo.
Oh, my.
Now, this chick,
wow,
also badass bitch. This girl, this poor girl, had recently had a break-in at her apartment, and so when this happened, she was just like, I have had enough. Fuck this. So what does this bab do? She runs directly for him. Oh my God. He's then shocked and takes off because she's just like, you know, she's just like, fuck this, man.
You know, like when you're at the grocery store and you're playing chicken with people, that's literally what she did. She's like, one of us is gonna go to the side and it's not me.
Yeah, she went. So he takes off, but she's like gaining on him. And the whole time she's like calling for help. And so a passing car stops to offer help to her. And so when they stop, they see him get into his car. And she actually, the woman in the car, actually writes down his license plate number on like her checkbook.
Good.
Hell yeah. Thing.
So she writes that down. The young jogger went to a neighboring house to call 911. And then others see the car, including a Washington Water power guard, who also noticed the license plate was yellow and managed to take down the license plate number as well. And again, when they run it, they're like, hey, this car is registered to Gordon Co.
Why did he do a fake vanity plate when I was just going to draw attention to your fucking car?
I don't know. I think he thought it would maybe disguise the car.
This is what
I don't know.
People who are fucking stupid think they're really smart and they do stuff like that. And they fuck themselves.
Yeah. So after this, even though the prosecutors didn't think that they had enough evidence to move forward, the police were like, this dickhead is way too dangerous.
Yeah, this is
to leave. Like,
too much to wait.
Yeah, we can't wait. So on March 10th, Frederick Harlan Coe, a.k.a. Fred Kevin, 34, is arrested at his real estate office on the charge of raping the 51-year-old woman at Hartfield. And $25,000 bail is set. This arrest is huge news. But the one man who doesn't get to report on it is his father, Gordon. Mm. Due to mounting pressure, Gordon was forced to take a leave of absence.
Interesting.
Now, Jay woke up that day, you know, like, la la la, making his coffee, goes out, picks up his newspaper.
I'm gonna go sell some houses.
Picks up his paper, and right there on the front is a picture of his best friend with the word South Hill Rapist.
Oh my God.
Jay said he felt like he'd been hit in the head and he reeled back and dropped the paper. He had known Fred Kevin longer than he had not known him.
Wow.
And was just a huge and influential part of his life. And so now Jay's like immediately conflicted. Like, wait a minute.
What a terrifying thing.
You know, where you're just like, okay, I hate the South Hill Rapist. I hate what he's done to Spokane, but wait, this is my best friend. So he goes to visit Coe in jail, and he said it was just like the movies. They walk in on opposite sides of the room, sit in a chair, pick up a phone. Wow. The first thing Coe says to his BFF is, I hope you know how absurd this is. To which Jay nods and says, yeah, in agreement. Coe then tells Jay that their conversation can be monitored and recorded, but he has some things to tell him.
For quality assurance.
Right. So Coe then begins to show him a series of pages that he just like presses up against the window one after another, which said something to the effect of, I love you and your family. I would do anything for you. So I'm calling on you to do this for me.
Ooh. Oh.
Now, Jay to this day insists with every fiber of his being that Coe had and would do anything for him. You know, like that, and that he prizes, you know, Jay prizes like loyalty and friendship over, you know, other, you know, over anything else. And So,
I don't know that I'd be loyal to you if you raped like 50 people, though.
Well, I mean, at this point, though, he's thinking like, this is your best friend. Yeah, this like, is all he... like, this can't be right. Like, they've obviously got the wrong guy.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be in straight up denial if someone was like, oh, yeah, Lindsay's been raping people. You'd be like, what the fuck? Like, what? No, she's not.
So Co instructs Jay.
Sorry, you're the rapist.
I'm glad she didn't say it was me.
Don't worry, I'm not.
Because Lindsay raping, oh my god, like you doing anything.
Me
like,
running also. Doing the running part. Running.
Yeah.
How klutzy in the knee. And
the yeah, the running part just would have cleared me immediately. Co instructs Jay to go to a house and look underneath the stairwell. He told him, you're going to find some things. They're totally innocuous, but they could be construed badly for me. In particular, a dildo that he claimed was a party joke. Oh my God. But since one of the survivors had seen him with a dildo, he better get rid of it.
With a deal.
With a dildo?
A dildo.
With that deal.
With a deal. A dildo.
Get that deal.
That's a dough. That's a dildo made out of dill. Dildo.
Dildo. No! So Jay is like, okay, like... He was conflicted because he's just like, well, I don't really feel like I should be getting rid of what could be evidence. But at the same time, like, this is my best friend. And these things could look bad for him. And he's telling me that this, you know, they're not related. So he agrees to do it. He goes to the house. He finds the dildo, and which he described as being as large as a loaf of bread. So I'm assuming like a
full, like one of those double dong-sided dildos.
Yeah.
Damn. He also found like a running outfit, like a jogging jacket. His first inclination was to get rid of both of them, but in the end, he decided to leave the jogging clothes, but he did grab the dildo and got the hell out of there. He claims that he dumped the dildo in the first dumpster that he found. And I read something that like Co wanted him to like cut it up into 100 pieces and scatter it in 100 different places around town. But
he's like, I'm not gonna do
that. He's like, I'm gonna throw this thing in the first dumpster.
I'm gonna do the bare minimum that I possibly can.
You're lucky this is getting out of the house.
Yeah. And, you know, Jay claims that he took the dildo for Mrs. Co's sake to save her the shame of, you know, it coming out that he had this disgusting thing. And he, the one thing that I will say for Jay in the Shattered episode that I watched is that he's like, look, he's kind of making excuses, and he's like, I realize that I'm probably portraying myself in a light better than I deserve, because he did. He got rid of evidence for this dude. Anyway.
This guy's too good for Fred Kev. Like, how? Yeah. Too good.
Meanwhile, the 18-year-old jogger had picked Co out of a lineup. And so prosecutors are going to go into trial, though, not knowing that Jay destroyed evidence. On March 11th or 12th, his bond was raised to $100,000.
Shit.
Since police cite that a link with the, you know, South Hill rapist case. On March 14th, survivors are summoned for a lineup. Jane talks about getting to the police station and seeing all of these women. And saying that, like, they weren't even able to look each other in the eyes. And it was just so overwhelmingly emotional. And it was only really at this time that she realized the magnitude of terror that this reign of terror was having. One at a time, each of the survivors were called up to look at the lineup. And they had to tell them, you know, could they identify any of the men? Jane saw him, and she said it felt like he was staring at her. She stared back to his profile, his nose, like that was the profile she had seen. And there was this little sense of hope in her, like, okay, please, like, let this be the thing that gets him off the street. But because he had always attacked from behind, only six of the women were able to identify him. On March 19th, the dentist that had chased the half-naked man picked Co out of a lineup. And then on March 23rd, he was charged with an additional 5 counts of rape. So... One was the 51-year-old woman that was he was originally arrested for, and then the 5 other women that were able to, like, so 6 women could identify him, but the 51-year-old was one of those. On April 3rd or 4th, he was released on $35,000 bond. On April 10th, Judge George Shields On April 10th, George... Judge George Shields ruled that Coe's court-appointed public defenders weren't able to see copies of the police reports. Though he later modified that ruling, allowing them to see some of the reports, that decision will come back to bite them in the ass on appeal.
So wait, the judge didn't let them look at police reports? And who was this that he didn't let them see it?
The public defenders that were defending.
Why? Isn't that illegal?
I don't...
Well, no.
Oh, because I'm pretty sure both sides are supposed to be able to have access to the same information.
I believe that they are. I don't... I mean, again, this is 1980-something. I honestly don't know. And I think that that is... I think it was at the time it was his discretion to rule whether they were... what is the word? There's like a... There's a word for it.
Do you guys follow the girl on fucking TikTok who reads amazing court transcripts?
Yes.
Oh, I've my seen some of them. Fucking God. Reading iconic court transcripts.
And I should be reading iconic court transcripts until I die. Counsel, I think it was successful. Judge, yes, well, even a blind squirrel can find a nut every now and again. And I feel like I'm just being judged for things I did in the past. Judge, yes, sir.
Does not start with
that's
a P.
That's exactly what's happening.
It's Your Honor, exculpatory.
Can you get exculpatory.
Wow, I wouldn't even remember that word.
Defendant, I'm trying to get my shit together. Judge, I'm familiar with that legal phrase.
Like her entire... I think she's a lawyer, and she literally just reads the stupidest shit that people said in court.
Okay, so that was on April 10th. On May 27th, the judge postpones the trial from June 1st to July 20th at the request of the defense attorneys.
My birthday.
On July 5th, Coe gives an interview to the Seattle Times. He claims he's innocent and says he and his mother were just trying to catch the South Hill rapist themselves.
I thought you were going to say just friends. Me and my mom are just friends.
We're just friends, goddammit. We're not fucking.
This,
what?
This would become their story at trial as well.
Oh.
They claimed that they were just good-hearted vigilantes.
Amazing.
Now, Jay...
neighborhood Spider-Man.
Does that even make any fucking sense?
It doesn't.
Jay Williams claims that Coe had also asked him to participate in this lie. Jay said, he asked me to go to the police and tell them I'd been working with him to try and catch the South Hill rapist. His plan was to say that Jay would act as a decoy, dressed as a woman. He also asked Jay to be a character witness for him, and he gave him a 2-page printout of the things, like, of traits that he wanted... He wanted
him to say
that he, you know, that Coe had. This list of traits came from a book about psychopaths called The Mask of Sanity.
Jesus Christ.
The traits he listed were in opposition to those from the book, so he wouldn't look like a psychopath. Now,
he literally said, I need you to read this book and just say everything exactly the opposite of what it says.
Well, he gave him a list of traits like, you know... What is it? Je de vivre, with a love of life. And he's like, you definitely don't have that. some of the traits applied to Coe, but most of them didn't. And so Jay told him, much to the chagrin of Coe's lawyers, that he couldn't testify because it would give the impression that he thought Coe was innocent. And at this point, he didn't anymore. According to Jay, Coe was also upset with his brother-in-law not testifying for him. So he's a little mad at Jay, but his response to, you know, Jay being like, hey, I'm not going to do it. He was like, yeah, curiously, my brother-in-law has some principles against lying because he wouldn't testify either. Now, on July 15th, jury selection begins in Spokane, but in the end, they have to move jury selection.
I was going to say they had to move it.
They had to move it to Seattle because an impartial panel could not be found in Spokane.
Yeah.
So on July 20th.
Seattle's about 6 hours away. Right?
Four.
Maybe I'm thinking of Portland.
Portland, see, now when I've driven there, like, Portland usually takes me between, like, 5, 5.5.
Yeah.
Seattle's 4, 4.5, and then it's, like, another 2 to go up to Vancouver from Seattle.
Yeah. Well, it's on the other side of the state, so good job for not keeping it in Spokane.
There you go. So, on July 20th,
yeah,
the trial begins in Spokane, but with a King County jury.
Okay.
The prosecutors had a pretty good circumstantial case. Coe had received speeding tickets in the area where two of the rapes had occurred. The rapist had type A blood, the same as Coe's. The rapist was also a secretor.
Oh, I know about the secretors and non-secretors.
You do?
I do. I know.
Do you want to tell us?
I don't remember all the details. I just know that that's a thing that they can search for in your semen, and it narrows down the pool because a large amount of men are non-secretors.
Most people, I think, aren't. So a secretor is someone whose blood type also shows up in their bodily fluids.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
So, yeah, so...
The word is
a terrible word.
It's a terrible word. But I love saying that Coe is a secretor.
He is. Wow.
And the police had followed him following buses. Several people had identified him, so they're feeling pretty good about this.
So they just find bits of... What did you say it was? Your blood is mixed in your bodily fluid?
Right. So, like, your blood type would be in your spit. Your blood type would be in your semen. Your blood type would be...
So it's people-specific. I guess I've just always heard it with men in their semen.
I mean...
That's probably gives them an extra affirmative that it is
this
person.
It's, like, only, like, 15% of people are secretors or something like that. So,
weird. And Ruth testified that the only reason that... Fred Kevin was seen following buses was because they were hunting the South Hill rapist. She said, Son would jog and I would follow in the car at a very slow rate. And
like he's going trick or treating. Right? She's like, I followed behind.
She also said, we went late at night when it was dark. Oh, sometimes 11:30, 12, 1, 2. I think the latest we were ever out was about 2:30.
Did she provide the dildo as well?
He pulled it from her drawer.
Ruth also gave him numerous alibis, stating that he had either been with her or his father at the time of each attack. On July 24th, Coe's former living girlfriend testified that she suspected he might be the South Hill rapist because of his odd behavior. No, she still stayed with him, but she claims that she witnessed him washing oven mitts at 6:30 in the morning.
What
the fuck? And that he had often come home with scratches. Now, he had said he didn't even own a pair of oven mitts because oven mitts were used in some of the rapes instead of gloves.
Oh.
Yeah, so she claimed that she saw him washing oven mitts that he said he didn't own at 6:30 in the morning. And that he would come home with scratches. And he would tell her the same thing. Like, oh, it was a dog on my jog.
I'd be like, you're really attracting a lot of animals, right? You, friend.
Why are you fighting these dogs for them to scratch you?
Yeah. Right.
They're defending themselves, you bitches.
Dogs are perfect and you suck.
Yeah.
She also testified that he often wore gloves, which was something that both he and Ruth had denied. Like, he doesn't wear gloves. And the girlfriend's like, he wears gloves all the time. Ooh. Her testimony also included a very graphic description of their sex life, which I'm not going to go into. But
Why?
She testified that he often used, like, vulgar terms with her. When they were engaged in sexual activity.
I'm not into that, but, like, some people want to be called a...
Do your kinky.
Do your kinky thing.
The person has to consent.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the state used the introduction of this testimony to show that some of the things that were being done were similar to the MO that the rapist used. Okay. The 51-year-old woman testified that Coe was the one that raped her 3 years before. And they had questioned her about receiving hypnosis to help the police get a description. Now, she, from what I understand, she was able to, like I had said before, she gave them a full description of him. But then they had given her hypnosis after to see if she could come up with anything else, which she didn't, which is why this is actually really important to note that she had given a description of him prior to being hypnotized, but they had just hypnotized her to see if she could come up with anything else.
Mm. He didn't call her Ruth? Mother? He didn't say mother.
Mother. Thanks to Criminal Minds, we know that, like, things come out when you're
hypnotized. Like, God damn it, mother, I'm not going to put away my plate.
Another woman testified that Coe had exposed himself to her 2 days before his arrest. His attorneys claimed that it was irrelevant and prejudicial, but the judge allowed the testimony. This, again, was later used in Coe's appeal. The jogger that had chased him also testified, and she had been able to give an excellent description. Coe had denied the incident happened, but he was like, I didn't do that. I was just in the area to pay a bill at Washington Water Power.
Oh, my God.
The police hadn't charged him for that incident, but the jogger identified him as the man who approached her. On July 27th, Coe took the stand. He denied that he was the South Hill rapist. He said he was in Seattle when most of the rapes took place. His mother also took the stand, as I said, and claimed that she was with him when the other rapes took place.
That's a committed mom, I guess.
Yeah. Perjury and I everything. Mean...
So on July 29th, the jury convicted Coe on 4 of the 6 counts. They acquitted him on 2, convicted him of the other 4. Prosecutor Daniel Brockett said that he believed Coe was responsible for at least some 20 rapes on the South Hill, but did not expect to bring additional charges. On August 16th or 17th, and I say 16th or 17th because our journalistic integrity needs to be stepped up a notch because so many things were like a day or two off.
Yep.
In my research, so I don't know. It's one of those 2 days that Kevin Coe was sentenced to 75 years by Judge Shields. So he got 20 years for one of the rapes, 30 for another, and then he got 25 for...
So pretty much the rest of his life.
Jane's case. Yeah, 75 years.
Without being a...
Exactly. Now, Coe had met in between, like, the sentencing and the trial. Coe met with a psychiatrist and supposedly admitted to one of the rapes, saying that he changes his story. Like, one source said that he said he was jealous of the South Hill rapist, like how much attention he was getting. Another one just said that he had become obsessed with reading about it, and so he wanted to commit a copycat rape in the attempt to basically see what all the fuss was about. And he said that it was awful and that, you know, he immediately lost his interest in rape after that, whatever. It was all bullshit. His hope was that he could claim to be a sex offender or that he could claim to have done that one rape. And then he was requesting the judge to put him in a sexual psychopathology, like whatever, program, a rehabilitation program at a mental hospital. So he would go to a mental hospital instead of going to prison.
Mental hospital is not better.
And Judge Shields was like, denied. In October of that year, Gordon Coe officially retired from the Spokane Chronicle. On October 7th, Coe's attorneys request that the state Supreme Court overturn his conviction and commit him to a mental hospital. But on November 19th, the Coe tapes happen. So we're going to talk about the Coe tapes. All right. So that is going to be the end of part one.
Part one.
Uno.
Uno. When we come back in part two, we will be talking about the Coe tapes, which is really exciting. And essentially a second and third trial that happened. Jesus. So this story is far from over. So be sure to tune in next week. If you're a Patreon, it might be available for you now. Just depends on how much weed Emily has smoked.
That is my favorite ending we've ever made.
So remember who you are and what you represent, and we will see you next week.
Love you.
Bye.
Thank
you.
Sorry, Goo.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. We put out new episodes every single Wednesday, and if you're impatient like me, be sure to become a Patreon where you can get your episodes early each week. For as little as $2 a month, you not only significantly support the production of this podcast, but you'll also get extra benefits and perks for being one of our special Patreon weirdlings. Go to patreon.com/throughsacrime for more information. For all of our links related to our socials, affiliate codes, where to listen, and everything else, go to linktree.com/throughsacrime.
Hey, weirdlings. Have you ever listened to a podcast and thought, man, I could do this? Well, guess what? That's exactly what we did, and you can too. Podcasting is a fun, inexpensive, and easy way to expand your reach online. Whether you have a message that you want to share with the world, just think having your own talk show would be cool, or you're looking for a new marketing or revenue stream, Buzzsprout has you covered. We can confirm that they're hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed on all of the major podcast directories within minutes of finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping all of us succeed. Join 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout, and let's get your message out to the world. If you're ready to get started on your podcast, follow the link in our show notes and you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card, and it helps support our show too. So what are you waiting for? Start your new podcast today.